genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I want to remind you to take today's poll up on my website. It's a real simple yes or no question. Will 2012 be a better year than 2011? Answer yes or no on the poll. You can see the results right there online. I'll announce the final results on the show tomorrow, Thursday. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is freedom. Each of my guests will explain a type of freedom, whether it's freedom to use technology, financial freedom, or personal freedom. My first guest is the antidote to overly complex technology. She's taught thousands of technophobes and technoclods how to use technology. We'll discuss her latest book, Is This Thing On? My second guest is the show's financial guru. I've invited him to return to the show to discuss 2011's top financial headlines and to forecast the financial markets in 2012. My third guest is a syndicated columnist for the Ventura County Reporter and 100 other newspapers across the country. Typically, she writes about good manners, but today we'll discuss an invasion of her personal rights so heinous that she's now advocating being rude at airport security. We'll discuss her story and her loss of personal freedom and the loss that we've all experienced post 9/11. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Abby Stokes has demystified computers for over 140,000 people, mostly seniors, in the past 17 years. Abby has taught courses in basic computing at both Cooper Union and New York University School of Lifelong Learning, as well as computer skills to private and corporate clients. She has lectured on the topic across the country. She's a firm believer that if her mother can learn to use the computer, anybody can. Abby is confident that everyone can master the computer and navigate the internet. Abby is the author of two books, Is This Thing On?, a computer handbook for late bloomers, technophobes, and those going kicking and screaming, and a second book, It's Never Too Late to Love a Computer. She splits her time between New York City and Nyadeck, Connecticut, joining us from the Northeast. Hi, Abby. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I am doing terrific. Thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. This is such a fascinating topic because you've written a wonderful primer for digital immigrants. And by digital immigrants, I mean people who were born after the digital revolution really took hold. And so my first question for you is, because there is this divide, are you seeing a digital divide between generations?
Oh, there absolutely is. It's not a divide that can't be bridged. But we need to acknowledge that digital immigrants, like any immigrant population, they're never going to be as comfortable with these new technologies as they were with what they grew up with. I have real issues with some of the designs that are happening with websites and these devices, because I always say to my students, it's not your fault. You know, some of these websites are just not designed in a way that is in any way intuitive. A digital native has an easier time kind of deciphering what's on the website, but a digital immigrant has a harder time. They can do it, but it's definitely a harder time.
All right. Now, that's interesting, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, because there are some specific issues that go along with generational issues, size of font, and all of that kind of stuff that go with it. But before I leave this digital divide question, I want to ask a little bit deeper question, if I can. Do you also see digital divides between genders and also digital divides between socioeconomic classes?
Absolutely. The gender question is such a good one. I'm sort of the best kept secret in New York City because a lot of corporate American males who are older hadn't had time to figure out how to use computers. They just kept plugging away at their jobs, and often I'll be hired to come into their offices to teach them the computer, but they'll be embarrassed to tell their secretary why I'm there. So they know there's an appointment with Abby, and Abby arrives, and she goes in the office, and the door closes for 2 hours, and then Abby comes out again, and they don't know why I'm there. I think it's a lot harder sometimes, these are generalizations, but for men with a computer because they tend to want to learn how it works as opposed to how to work it, and that's an unnecessary burden. If that's your interest, it's great, but to add that to your burden when you're already intimidated makes the process a little bit harder. So I would say that's really the biggest difference I see between men and women is men sort of make it harder for themselves because they want to understand it, and women tend to be much more relaxed about that, and they just want to figure out how to use it. Certainly there are issues when we're talking about different economic structures. It's all about what people have available to practice on. I mean, it's much easier for somebody to learn how to use a computer when there's one available in their home. If they don't have one available in their home and the library is far away or their library doesn't have the resources to have something for them to practice on, then it becomes even more difficult to cross over that divide.
My guest is Abby Stokes. So, Abby, what are the implications that all of these digital divides are posing for us as a society and as an economy?
Well, I think it's truly a scary thing unless we work very hard to figure out how to bridge it. I mean, if we're losing radio stations and people have to pay money for cable television and the newspapers are going and libraries are folding, the people that are feeling left behind already are going to feel only that much more left behind. If everything's going into technology and they don't have access to it, we'll lose them. So it's very important that we think about having Wi-Fi that's universal, that's available to anyone, places where people can get their hands on the technology if they can't afford to buy it themselves. We have to think we can't let these people go because things will only get worse for them when they get further and further away from what everybody else seems to be using to function on a daily basis.
All right. Now, Abby, let me ask you one follow-on question in the same genre. Is the digital divide that we see and the movement towards all of these digital devices, is it making the next generation smarter or dumber than its predecessors?
I would say not able to focus for long periods of time. So if that makes them dumber, you know, I hate to use that word, but I would say that, you know, one study came out and said that younger people are less apt to be able to read facial expressions well because they're not looking in people's faces for extended periods of time when they're having conversations. They tend not to be able to read long books. They tend to like to read short articles because that's sort of what they're being fed when they're online. I think it's so important for older people to be empowered to know their job is to remind younger people there's a blue sky out there they should be looking at. You know, really, it's like you sort of forget that you're on a train for 4 hours, and what are you doing? Your head's jammed in a computer, and you're not looking out the window. So I think a lot is to be lost if we don't keep remembering to look up.
Very good. My guest is Abby Stokes. She's author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming. So here's some interesting statistics about that Generation Y, or what people call the millennials. A recent CBS survey said that 55% of them surveyed said they cannot live without the internet. One person went on to say that he would rather have his heat turned off in his apartment than to lose his internet. That's a very harsh statement, particularly in New York City. Only 25% of teenagers this year held summer jobs. That is the lowest number in U.S. history. Young adults are living with their parents longer. Right now, 59% of the millennials' kids, males, live with their parents, and 50% of the females live with their parents. And 56% of millennials won't accept a job from a company that bans social media use. Even more than that, that the people that do look at companies look at the choice of cell phones and whether they can work remotely as being more important to them than salaries. So, you know, we've got all of these techno-savvy kids living at home, apparently not working, or if they are in the workplace, they're available to the older. Why aren't they helping to mentor the older people and then the older people helping to mentor them on life skills?
Well, those statistics are so shocking, and to me it just speaks of isolation. I mean, what you're really dealing with is, by not putting yourself out into the world to get a job when you're 16, to live on your own, is their world just seems to be getting smaller and smaller. Those that are, you know, answer those questions that way. Mentoring a senior would be the best thing that somebody could do, because, in fact, there's so much to learn from your students. There always is. It's always a two-way street. It would be wonderful if we had more programs where high school students were teaching seniors, and seniors, in turn, would automatically, by default, be teaching high school students.
Hmm, what a great idea. Maybe that's something that you ought to propose. My guest is Abby Stokes. So, Abby, let's get down to the meat of your book, which is really helping people who are either afraid of the computer or came late to the party to really understand it. And I really, what boils down to is the needs and the uses of technology will vary greatly according to what generation that you happen to fall into. The best example of this is that on Facebook, women aged 45 to 59 are the fastest growing segment of Facebook because they want to keep up with what's going on in the family using Facebook as that medium. So what are some of the more common usages that you see that draw technophobes and people that are late to the party into technology?
Well, I think the very first thing is obviously email, because email makes communicating with friends and family so simple. And it doesn't matter about time, and it's inexpensive. So I think email's always the first draw for people. I think now, because we're hearing so much about Facebook, there's the curiosity element for a lot of my students about Facebook. I'm not sure if they're going to jump onto the bandwagon with it, but they certainly, well, one of the other reasons I say, and this relates to Facebook, most of the motivation for people to get on a computer when they're older is they don't want to feel left behind. So it's almost any topic you hear that's in the news, they hear about it, and they just want to figure out what it is so they stop feeling like people are talking about things they don't understand. Hmm. Facebook is a great example of that. I'm not sure my students are really chomping at the bit to get on Facebook. They're chomping at the bit to know what on earth people are talking about when they talk about Facebook.
Well, that's an interesting distinction, Abby. Well, what about things like, you know, WebMD and things like that, where people can go online and check health issues? Is that a driving force for putting people onto the internet? Or do you see a lot of people migrating there just so that they can keep up with health matters?
Absolutely. Actually, that's the number one driving force as far as web searches are concerned for seniors is health. So it's very important for people who've decided to get online for that reason to use the same common sense you would use in your three-dimensional world. I wouldn't walk out on the street and ask somebody's advice on diabetes. I would go to a professional in the field that I've heard about. So the Mayo Health Clinic is a great website, WebMD. You want to be sure you're going to websites that have legitimate information to offer. But health is one of the very first things. Travel is very important, and often it's not that the people are actually going to travel. They like the information they're getting about the travel. So it's almost like a vicarious connection to the world outside without actually getting on the airplane.
How very interesting. Well, now it brings up another interesting point, Abby, and that is online shopping. Do you see online shopping being a magnet to draw people that have been technophobes onto technology?
Absolutely. Although there's a great statistic that came out, you know, $25 billion was made in 2010 from senior shopping online. It would have been $75 billion. $50 billion was lost because the website had usability issues. So what we're finding is this enormous demographic, this powerful and wealthy demographic, is jumping off certain websites because they're not designed well. I'll give you an example. I had a client who was doing her Christmas shopping. She's a wonderful woman, very intelligent. She'd gotten everything in the shopping cart, and she couldn't get past the checking out. So she called me while her computer was still on, and we had chosen a very specific password that she would use on all of her shopping sites. And so at the bottom of the website, it said, type your password. She typed her password. She told me what it was. She couldn't see it because it was all those little dots. And then underneath that, it said, confirm your password. And I said, Gillis, what did you type? And she said, I confirm. And it's not her fault. You know, that should have been retype your password.
Right.
So I think sometimes, you know, online shopping is a wonderful thing, but there are times where it gets glitchy, and digital immigrants are more apt to walk away when they've made a couple of mistakes and lost their way, where a digital native is more apt to sort of be persistent and keep on forging ahead.
Well, now that is interesting, because the elderly people, or people that are in the baby boom generation, and I certainly fall into that generation, we're the ones that have all the money. You would think that people who make websites would make it easy for people that are in the baby boom generation to be able to buy things and to check out, because frankly, we have a lot more money than our millennial children and grandchildren do.
Absolutely. I actually think what we may see, you know, we've got our digital revolution going on, but what we really need to see is the revolution of baby boomers and beyond, who see the ability to use the internet for social change, because they have a lot of voices, they've got a lot of power and money, but they haven't quite figured it out yet how to galvanize that. And if they did that, they would be more respected, and web designers would take into consideration their usability issues.
Very good point. My guest is Abby Stokes, author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming. So all of this talk about online shopping, particularly for the baby boom generation, Abby, does bring up a big issue, which is online security. Because when you have neophytes going online using their credit cards, it automatically brings up the issue of online security. Is that a problem, or how do you address that problem with your students and in the book?
Well, I think that computers get a bad rap, because it tends to be that computers are blamed for online security issues, when in fact criminals are criminals, whether they're taking your credit card at a restaurant and making a copy of it, or whether you're calling L.L. Bean and the person who answered the phone decided to copy it. So your credit card is vulnerable anytime you use it. The lucky thing is, in the case of your credit card, usually the credit card company, when fraud has happened, they will absorb the expense as long as you let them know about it. But if you wanted to be safe, you could get one credit card devoted to online shopping. So if, in fact, something happened to it, it wouldn't be the only credit card when it gets canceled. So you have one that you use just for online shopping, and you really carefully look at that bill when it comes in to be sure that everything is what you've used it for. The most important thing really isn't about your credit card. It's about your Social Security number. That's what you want to guard with your life and not put it anywhere on your computer. You're never going to put it in an email to somebody, and you shouldn't be carrying it in your wallet.
Wow, very good advice. Well, Abby, I'm going to change gears on you for just a minute here, because the trend in technology right now is away from the laptop and the desktop computer towards smartphones and tablet computers. Now, you've updated your book to include these devices, but do you see technology phobes really resisting this change? And really importantly, the question that I'm asking is, how does the limited screen size affect the people that read your book and take your classes?
Well, it's a problem. I mean, I have a client who has macular degeneration, and she was very excited about the Kindle because you can expand the screen size, so your text is larger, but you can't expand the menu that's within that, so you can't see where to go so that you can increase the text size. So, again, I think we've got some usability issues with the designs. Now, the iPad and some of the tablets really are truly, you can expand the screen with limitations. So if you have Parkinson's, obviously using a tablet is going to be harder tapping on the screen, but there are styluses that you could buy that you can hang on to that'll give you some more stability. It's the first thing you need to look into when you're thinking about buying a device. I don't even look at price. Don't try to figure out what's inside it. You need to see if you can touch it and if you can see it to your comfort.
My guest is Abby Stokes, author of the book, Is This Thing On? A Computer Handbook for Late Bloomers, Technophobes, and the Kicking and Screaming. Abby, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Is This Thing On?
I want them to feel at the end of the book that they understand what people are talking about, and they absolutely are capable of doing anything that's out there. They might not want to at the end of reading it, but I want them to know that they can. There's nothing stopping them.
Oh, that is great. Abby, if people are intrigued by what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
I have a website. It's Abby and Me, ABBYANDME, abbyandme.com. And it has tutorials. You can email me from the website. I give you web links to visit.
Oh, that is great. Abby, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Take care.